radioalburn.com.
Welcome to Truth Will Out Radio. Today's date is Friday the 17th of January 2020, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, broadcasting live today at radioalbion.com, because we have with us the producer of Adolf Hitler, The Greatest Story Never Told, Communism by the Back Door, and the Freemasonic Victory of World War II, and a new documentary series that we're just about to begin to tell you about, Mr. Dennis Wise. How are you doing, sir?
It's going to be a real mouthful now, isn't it, in future?
Yeah, I have to remember four of them. Cool.
I'm doing okay. I mean, we talked about it last week, and I managed to do some research. And I think listeners will be quite surprised what we found out this week.
So what's the subject of the new documentary series going to be, Dennis?
Well, I watched Good Morning Television a while back, and I saw Piers Morgan stoutly defend Winston Churchill. And the guy who was trying to tell him Winston Churchill wasn't the guy everybody thinks he was, and Piers Morgan just went into a constant rant. Wasn't even a debate, just a abuse. And so, knowing what Winston Churchill has done to my family, affected my family during World War II, and I knew of other things that he'd done, I thought, I don't really think there's a documentary out there which covers the body count of Winston Churchill.
So is that what it's going to be called then?
That is the target at the moment. Yeah, that's the title.
Well, I was just thinking then, it's a really good sort of contrast to Adolf Hitler, who everybody thinks is the most evil man alive, and you did your version of that, The Greatest Story Never Told, and then you got Winston Churchill, who, you know, most people think is a great hero and a great patriot, and yet his story is horrific, and the blood on his hands, the number of deaths that he's caused, the collapse of the British Empire, and yet there's no films or documentaries out that really show that. They all portray him in this glorious light, basically. I mean, they did a documentary film just recently, didn't they, where they made him out to be a great hero. So right. Very timely, I think.
Like the way Piers Morgan were arguing, I mean, it could have been Jack the Ripper. It didn't really matter because, he saved us from the Nazis. But in my opinion, and as we'll find out in this first section today, he's worse than Jack the Ripper already.
Well, it's going to be quite a challenge for you, isn't it, really? Because you're used to sort of, you know, you use the music and the imagery to get people behind Adolf Hitler. So you're going to do the same thing, but in reverse, sort of use horror music for Churchill and, you know, sort of dark lighting, scary effects, that sort of thing?
I honestly don't think I'd need to be honest. I think the facts will speak for themselves, but I may use some effects here, there and everywhere. But like, I just started this week to research one of the great failures of Churchill was the sinking of the Lusitania. And I was amazed. I really was amazed at what I came across.
Yeah, so this is going to be the first episode of it, the sinking of the Lusitania, and luckily I've been able to see a preview edition, so we'll be talking about that today. Is that going to be the very start of it, do you think, of the story of Churchill, or do you think maybe you're going to go back further? I mean, wasn't there the Boer War that he was involved in?
Yeah,
as
there
well?
Was. Yeah, I'll try if I can, rather than, I mean, before I always had the problem with YouTube, I had to get them up quick and so they weren't necessarily always in order because, you know, what I came across, I actually found and then did the documentary part 4, 5, 6, whatever, all just as it came. But I may hold back on uploading till I get a reasonable idea of the order, because like you said, he had fun and games, I think, down in South Africa as well.
So it's not going to be linear. It's going to sort of move back and forward in time.
Yeah. I'm hoping it won't be 6 hours.
Well, that would make a change as well. Targeted at a different demographic. I mean, these long documentaries, I mean, it's taken me, 2 years to see that, make the time to watch that Europa, the final battle. So there is that to it. But also, I mean, if you're going to do it, like not do it in a linear fashion, I mean, what you could do is say something happened, like the mention of the concentration camps or something, something to do with Churchill and the propaganda of the Second World War concentration camp. But then you could go back to the Boer War concentration camps and link it back that, couldn't you?
There's different ways of doing it. But I think rather than put up part one, part two, part three, I think I may even consider completing it before I actually upload it.
Right. But then, of course, the thing then is you're going to come across more information and more content that you'd like to put in there, and you'll have already put up the finished product, as it
were. Well, yeah, but then again, I can always do a bonus part. Yeah. Depending just what number the body count is at that particular time.
Well, yeah, this is the other thing. I mean, are you going to be able to get all the terrible things that Churchill did just into 4 15-minute episodes? I think you'll have trouble.
Well, yeah, I could have a problem with that. I could. We'll have to wait and see. Certainly, he had a lot of problems with people at home. He wasn't liked in Wales. For obvious reasons, a miners' strike, bayonet charge, a couple of miners were killed. He wasn't popular at Clydebank. Apparently, he didn't bother sending defences up there, and Clydebank was bombed more than any other place in Britain. So there was no love for Churchill up there. And, you know, when you look at what Hitler did for his people and you compare it to what Churchill does for his people, you know, there's a gap. Piers Morgan needs to look at history in a different light.
Well, we were all expendable in Churchill's eyes, as will come clear in this. But also in India, I don't think they liked him very much out there in India either, did they?
No, that's the starvation in India. I think he gassed the Kurds. I think.
Yeah.
I think he'd ordered the gassing of Germany, but was persuaded not to once he'd signed the agreement.
An animal.
I mean, we could say that actual blockade in World War One, which went on during the war, was probably a million lives. And the one after the war, which nobody knew about, to force the Germans to sign the Treaty of Versailles was nearly another million. So he's going to get quite a pretty big body count, I think.
That's before you take in the fact he lost us the British Empire. Lost us our standing in the world, basically. Lost the biggest empire the world has ever known. And he just frittered it all away on fighting against our brothers in Germany, destroying Europe. Just unbelievable when you think about the truth, what happened. And it really shows you just how twisted this world is that we live in, how full of lies it is, and how false it is that these great heroes are actually devils in disguise. And we've been told all these lies as history that are so far removed from the truth. It's just, you know, it's mind-blowing when you discover it, really. You know, it's life-changing, isn't it?
It's unreal. I mean, like I said, this first episode, I didn't know, you know, any great depth of detail in it. I knew he was responsible, which is why I started researching it. But once I found out what the bare bones was, this guy's a psychopath. He must be.
Well, we did a little bit about the Lusitania before in Axis War Heroes. And Messerschmitt did a bit on that, but I don't think he came out with some of the stuff that you've discovered in this first episode, Churchill's body count.
Yeah, I was shocked, so I'm pretty sure other people are going to be shocked.
Well, I got the transcript of it here, so we can go through that and we can discuss it. It begins. It says the German embassy in America takes out a notice in newspapers warning passengers that Germany is in a state of war with Britain. and that this includes the waters adjacent to the British Isles in accordance with formal notice given. I'm assuming that's, you know, that's basically meaning that that's in accordance with the Geneva Convention. If you're at war with somebody, then the waters of that country are fair game. Is that correct, Dennis, there?
Well, yeah, and plus, at that time, Britain had put a blockade on Germany and they were trying to use starvation, obviously, to affect the war.
Although Woodrow Wilson is pretending to want to keep America out of the war, the country is sending passenger vessels with supplies to Britain, effectively aiding the British war effort. Because of this, Germany warns that the use of human shields like this will lead to tragedy. Now, the documentary series that you see on the television, they'll try to say that Woodrow Wilson was a peacemaker and he really didn't want America yeah. to go to war. But, you know, here he is. He's already aiding Britain. And this is a couple of years before America went into the war, isn't it?
Very similar to what Roosevelt. I mean, they both worked for the bankers. Roosevelt did the same thing where, you know, while America was a neutral country, he was dealing with Churchill.
The German embassy in the United States placed specific newspaper advertisements warning people of the dangers of sailing on the RMS Lusitania. But the passengers ignored the threat, thinking it was just wartime propaganda. And RMS Lusitania left New York for Britain on May the 1st, 1915, when German submarine warfare was intensifying in the Atlantic. So it's not like the Germans just did this without any warning. They're putting advertisements in the newspapers specifically about this Lusitania. And as we just heard there at the beginning, they were also taking out other notices, just warning passengers, we are at war with Britain. What are you doing getting on board these passenger ships and going into the British waters? And this, you know, this really does remind me of just recently, what are passenger jets doing flying above Iran when Iran is just about to mm-hmm. attack Iraq? What is passenger jets doing flying above Ukraine when Ukraine is ostensibly having a proxy war or whatever it is with Russia and the Donetsk region? Have we learned nothing? I mean, this was 100 years ago they were doing this. And the same thing is going on today, isn't it?
Well, the thing is, I look at this and I see what the Germans were doing. They're actually putting newspaper adverts and warning people. Something Churchill wouldn't even waste his time with.
Well, he had no interest in saving anybody's lives, did he? Everybody's lives were just expendable to Churchill.
That's right. There was a certain honour about the Germans.
You know, no value at all.
They did have certain morals and standings, even in wartime.
Well, then we move to finding out what was actually going on in Britain. From the archives, we now know that London knew there was a U-boat that was on its way to Liverpool, and Liverpool is the destination of where the Lusitania is going to. And London knew that because there was a secret intelligence department that was called Room 40, and only mm-hmm. Churchill knew about its existence. Do you know, what do you know about this Room 40, Dennis? Did you just find out about it for this episode, or yep. have you heard of it before?
I've never heard of it before, no. I didn't even know there was a Room 40 involved. But obviously, you know, wartime and secrecy and, you know, again, it's just the same in the Second World War. You know, the British were pretty good at breaking codes.
What was the intelligence called? I mean, there must have been a name for the military intelligence. Is it OSS or something like that in the Second World War? And then we've got MI6 now, I guess.
Well, you got MI6, MI5. Well, I think MI5 and MI6 were going then, I think. I think they're going in the Tudor era with our friend.
Oh, the magician.
The occultist, yeah. I think it was
John Dee. John Dee.
John Dee, yeah. John MI5, Dee. I think, or MI6.
Yeah, I think he started the intelligence agencies off, didn't he? The British one. Well, this is a code breaking, isn't it? Do you have any information on how they actually had broken this code? Because apparently they'd broken the code that the Germans were talking in, and this hadn't been made known to anybody. It was a secret that Britain did actually know what the Germans were saying at this time. Do you know anything about that?
Well, I'm not sure what technique they used or if they had any machinery, but they did the same in World War II. I think, obviously, they were more advanced even then. And, of course, the Americans brought the Japanese code in the Second World War as well. So, like I said, the Allies were pretty clued up on breaking codes and surveillance.
Well, in the Second World War, they had the Enigma machine, which they liked to make a big thing about, and this amazing machine and this homosexual mathematical genius that helped crack the codes. It happened, you know, rather a strange coincidence that when it happened, also happened to be when Rudolf Hess landed and was given truth drugs and was tortured. And, you know, there's always been like a question over this code cracking, because the Germans said it was impossible for their code to actually be cracked. But if they'd had some help with it, then it would have been possible.
Yeah.
And they may have got this information from Hess, but they wouldn't have said that because they wanted to say, look how brilliant we are. We've cracked this completely uncrackable code. When in actual fact, they'd actually had a little bit of help with it. I mean, what they would have to have
is some way
of deciphering. I mean, even if they just had one set of words and actually knew how to decipher that, that would have helped them to be able to put that into the machine, and then they'd have been able to break the code of the rest of it.
Mm.
But that was much later on from here. So we had this room 40, and they were listening in to the German radio talk, and they had cracked the German communications code but were keeping quiet about it. And Churchill knew about this. Churchill was responsible for this room 40. He was who they answered to, and he was the head of the Admiralty, wasn't he?
Yeah, so the book stops with him.
And what was the Admiralty? Was that just the Navy?
I seem to recall when I did the secret Masonic victory on Ireland, he was made Lord of the War and Air as well, I think, Sea and Air.
Right.
It was a weird title.
So not just the Navy. I mean, I guess aviation was in its infancy back then, so maybe that was seen as a part of the Navy as well. But we've actually got a top secret letter from Churchill that he wrote at this time, and it was released to the public now, probably would have been after his death. Do you know when this information came out, Dennis?
Well, I think there's a time period in there normally. I know Trump was going to release some stuff on Kennedy, but he held some back. So they do hold stuff back at times. But usually it's probably about, I think, max 50 years maximum, I think.
Yeah, and sometimes they wait until anybody involved is dead, so they can't get any backlash from it. But you have there's this letter there, and you have a couple of clips from the letter, but I was able to actually see what the whole letter is, so I transcribed it, because there's there's a couple of other interesting bits in there. And this is written by Churchill. This is a top secret letter that he wrote in 1915. "It is most important to attract neutral shipping to our shores, in the hope especially of embroiling the United States with Germany. The Germans' formal announcement of indeterminate submarining has been made to the United States in order to produce a deterrent effect on traffic. For our part, we want that traffic. The more the better. And if some of it gets into trouble, better still. Therefore, please do finish up at once your insurance offer to the neutrals trading with us after February the 18th. The more that come, the greater our safety and the German embarrassment. Please act promptly so that the announcement may synchronize with our impending policy." So there's a couple of bits there. What he's saying is he's admitting that those adverts that were put into the American newspapers, that was to try and save lives. That was to try and stop these vessels coming to Britain, bringing supplies, but also the loss of life. And Churchill wasn't interested in that. He's saying, we want the opposite. We want that traffic. The more of that traffic there is, the better. And if we lose a load of lives, it's even better still.
Especially American lives,
lots of people die. Yeah, American lives, Americans who are kindly helping Churchill out here. And then he's saying about these insurance offers. Please finish up these insurance offers. So they must have had insurance that they were offering the neutrals that were supposed to be trading with them, and so they were setting up the insurance as well to encourage people to come over deliberately, so that they could because they knew that the submarines would blast them.
Yep.
And I guess they were also encouraging people to ignore the adverts and say, well, this is just wartime propaganda. The U-boats won't really fire on you. There aren't that many of them. They're not going to come that close to the shore. All sorts is what they would have been saying. Well, Room 40 knew that there was a U-boat in the same waters that the Lusitania was, and that was due to them intercepting the German communications. And because of this, an unknown somebody tried to warn prominent passengers on the Lusitania by telegram not to sail on the ship. I found this interesting because this one got me. Well, yeah, well, they literally telegrammed the ship itself. They didn't send to directly to the people they were sending it to, but they actually sent it to the ship. So it must have been that the ship was literally just about to leave. And they sent this telegram there. And you would think if somebody was sending a telegram, they'd be able to work out who it was. They would be able to trace who it was.
Yeah, but they never found out, did they?
No, it's strange. And the message itself said, the Lusitania is to be torpedoed. Cancel passage immediately. And yet they ignored it. And it was addressed to a millionaire called Vanderbilt and a Broadway producer. And both of them dismissed the threat as just being a joke. So who did they think it came from, if they thought it was a joke?
It's a difficult one, isn't it? I think there may have been one or two other prominent passengers who got warned, but again, didn't take any heed. But I mean, you know, in hindsight, I'm sure they would have done.
Do you know who these people were? Vanderbilt and the other one?
No. Well, Vanderbilt was obviously was a businessman, millionaire. The other one was what did he have?
Broadway producer, but
what? Oh, that's right. Yeah, New York Broadway players, weren't it?
You don't know anything about them.
Personally, no. No, just that they were traveling on that ship as millionaires were traveling on the Titanic.
Well, yeah, that's what it made me think of. But on the Titanic, you know, they had people that were actually against the Fed, didn't they? They had a lot of economic people.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Wanted to put a stop to it. And, you know, there's that conspiracy theory that the Titanic was deliberately sunk so that they could deliberately sink, you know, the good guys that were on it that wanted to stop what was happening with the banks. And you got something the other way around here. You've got people being warned not to actually get on the ship because the good guys were helped onto the Titanic, weren't they? I think if I remember right, there was some encouragement for them to actually get on this ship. And then obviously the tragedy happened. So maybe it's worth trying to find out a little bit more about these people that they tried to warn.
The moral of the day is you know, if somebody warns you about a sinking, then take note.
Yeah, and also, you know, the fact that they said, oh, well, it must be a joke, it must be, you know, wartime propaganda or whatever, just the fact that they ignored it. I mean, who would make a joke like that?
Exactly.
Who would make a joke like that? And it must have either been somebody from inside the intelligence agency, inside Room 40, or someone they knew.
Somebody went out the way, yeah.
There can't have been that many people in there.
Oh, I agree.
But it shows that someone has a conscience, doesn't it? Shows you that some of them have a conscience.
It's nice to know, isn't it? But certainly wasn't Winston.
No. Churchill, he issues an instruction for all the masters of the merchant ships. So they're the ones that aren't supposed to be fighting, the neutral ships. He sends out a message to them telling them that they are to attack any U-boat that looks hostile by steering straight for them at top speed. And that's because the front of the vessel would be razor sharp and it would basically just slice a U-boat in half. And, you know, and I was looking at this and I was thinking, well, why would they see the submarine? Wouldn't the submarine just be staying below and wouldn't it just shoot them with a torpedo? And the first they would know about it is that they'd be hit by a torpedo. But no, because this is before that sort of submarine warfare happened, and that happened because of Churchill doing this, because what they would do before is they would surface and obviously the ship would see them, they would see them and they would say, right, get in your lifeboats because we're going to scupper your vessel. And all, and everybody would get off and every single life would be saved. And then the U-boat would scupper the vessel. And what Churchill did was say, no, we don't want that. If you see them coming up, you're to blast straight into them.
Yeah, this one got me as well, because he's actually asking a liner with women and children to attack a U-boat. And they have no idea. They wouldn't have had a clue. So it's a very strange command from a very psychopathic person.
You know, if this boat comes up, I mean, what he's effectively saying is, if the U-boat comes up, pretend to obey their orders, pretend to be coming towards it, and then at the last minute, put your foot on the throttle and slam straight into them. Which, of course, as you say, Dennis, that's going to cause a risk to the boat as well. But apparently, these U-boats were very thin, and they would just slice in half, and it would kill everybody on there, all of them.
Well, they stopped surfacing, like I said, eventually. You know, obviously, they must have had experience of this.
Yeah, well, this is why. Because of Churchill's order. This totally changed the rules of naval warfare. Because up until then, it was about saving as many lives as possible. And Churchill changed it to just kill as many as you can. And don't care about your own either.
Civilians have never actually, you know, he's never held them close to his heart, whichever country they may be in, whether it be India or Germany. He's always attacked civilians.
That's a war crime. A war crime to attack civilians.
Certainly is.
Let alone to set them up and send them into dangerous waters that you've already been warned that there's going to be submarines there. Well, that wasn't all he did. He also orders the arming of some merchant ships with secret guns to shoot at submarines. Yep. Telling them to stop when ordered to, pretend to obey orders, but then run the U-boat down once it's surfaced and either shoot the Marines or rescue them, whichever is most convenient. And of course, you know, all he means there is just shoot them.
Yeah, I don't think you've batted an eyelid. I mean, he's got a very strange idea of war. In the documentary, I found it said he had it was quite radical, you know, but really, it was just a psychopath.
Well, because you think about this, you know, what's most convenient, taking on board these people on board your vessel or leaving them there? Obviously, leaving them there is going to be the most convenient, but it's the most inhumane. But I think the only reason why you put there whatever is most convenient, oh, you could rescue them, is just because you didn't want to be seen as being such a psychopath. And don't forget, these vessels are the equivalent of going along at sea with a white flag. They're neutral.
Yeah.
So this is a false flag operation that he's setting up here. He's saying you go along with a flag of peace with secret guns on board, and if you see any submarines, pretend to be friendly, go over there and then shoot them and run them down.
A man of honour. Not.
Scum. And he called his, he called this deadly fleet Q ships. I don't know why he called them Q ships. Any ideas, Dennis?
Well, it's something to do with wolves in sheep's clothing. He felt he'd get the upper hand by a surprise attack with these merchant ships. But obviously, it's put every single merchant ship now at risk.
No, I'm just wondering why he called them Q ships. Why the letter Q? Oh, U-boats and Q ships, maybe.
Maybe.
Because the Q comes before the letter U,
possibly.
In a word, maybe. I'm no good at crosswords, but
it's a good show.
Cryptic clues there, and because of this, the U-boats dared not surface to give a fair warning of attack, for fear of being rammed. Churchill had broken all the rules of naval warfare, and from that day onwards, it changed.
Yeah, I think a lot changed in World War One. Even at the end of the war, there was no lands returned. There was more land stolen. There was food diverted away from Germany. A lot went on where normally after a war, things are settled down and eventually you sign a peace treaty and things had settled down. But No, not after World War One.
Well, up to this point, you would lose the vessel, but you wouldn't lose lives. I mean, that was the point. You know, the enemy would be there. The enemy would surface. He would say, right, you know what you've got to do. Get in your lifeboats. If you haven't got any lifeboats, get in these handcuffs and you can come on board our vessel. And then we're going to plant mines on your vessel and it's going to sink to the bottom. Or else they might tow the vessel to wherever they wanted to take it. I mean, before they had the days of, gunpowder, they would tow the vessel. They would keep the vessel for themselves. They would capture them if they could, when they had the naval warfare that was side by side, you know, when you had vessels side by side and you'd be firing off volleys at one another, they would try to actually capture the vessel and take it in. And it's the warfare grew on from there up till this point.
What Germany couldn't allow was the fact that these ships, which Churchill was obviously using and the US, was sending arms over to England, and these arms would obviously be used on German soldiers and German civilians, as we know. So there's no way that Germany could allow it. But at least they're trying to do the honourable thing by saying, you know, we'll warn you.
Well, this is how the Germans discovered that what was going on, that these supposedly neutral ships were bringing ammunition and supplies that they shouldn't have been, because they captured the vessels rather than just firing a torpedo at them from whilst they were still under the water. It's because they discovered this that they knew that Churchill had broken all the rules. And again, you know, this is putting civilian lives at risk. This is a war crime. And Churchill was never tried for it, not in the First World War, and of course not in the Second World War either.
No, well, that's what happens when you win.
German commanders began to suspect that even the passenger liners may have been armed by him. And they are right. In May 1913, the Lusitania had been equipped to carry powerful guns. There are 12 gun turrets hidden on her decks under coils of rope, making her a legitimate target. So who was it that did that? Was that the RMS? So that the Lusitania, was it a British ship or an American ship?
I think it was a British ship.
Yeah, a British ship. So it was Churchill who put these gun turrets on the ship, on the passenger ship, that had over 1,000 civilian passengers on there, and he's effectively turned the ship into a vessel of war and a more than a legitimate target. You know, just to have all the ammunition on board, or just to be smuggling supplies into Britain makes it a legitimate target, let alone with a load of ammo on board and a load of guns. But some people know about the ammunition because it blew up, and we've heard reports in Schmidt's description of it, going off like fireworks. But the fact that it actually had gun turrets on there as well, you know, I wasn't aware of that. And you show a picture of these coils of rope that have got these guns hidden in them in the episode, don't you?
Oh, yeah.
Now, the U-boat reaches Ireland and it attacks a small schooner. And the captain permits the crew to abandon the ship before sinking her, and no one is killed. So this is the way it should be done, basically.
Yeah.
You know, they give them a choice, and they give them their lives, basically. They do all they can to save lives rather than do all they can to lose as many lives as possible. London hears about it, but does not warn the Lusitania or send out a naval escort. Does nothing at all about it.
Silence.
And they can get away with that as well, because America doesn't know that Britain has cracked the German codes and doesn't know what the Germans are talking about, because it was through hearing hearing the Germans reporting back to base that this had happened, that they knew that it had happened. The Lusitania continues sailing on, totally oblivious to the danger. On May the 6th, two more British merchant ships are sunk, neither one of them by a single torpedo. And all crew are saved. So what that means is that they must have put mines on the vessel itself, rather than firing from under the water, basically.
Well, either that or they used more than one torpedo, because when the Lusitania was under threat of attack, they only had two torpedoes, the Germans, and they felt that they needed one just to get back, just in case, when they're going back to Germany. So they only used that one torpedo, which was never enough to sink that ship, because torpedoes at that time weren't that big and weren't as powerful as, say, in the Second World War.
Right, so also imagine, like, where you hit the ship matters as well.
I would imagine that that'd be important as well, yeah.
But what they're saying here is that they didn't use any torpedoes, so they weren't firing from, you know, from being hidden somewhere, so that the crew mm-hmm. didn't know what it was that had just hit them. They'd already made themselves like known to them and said, right, time to get out of the boat. We're about to scupper it. After a day and a half of silence, Britain finally does warn the liner, but doesn't send out an escort, doesn't give any orders to change course, just lets them know that a U-boat had taken two ships out. Now, I found this a little bit confusing, Dennis, because was it in German that they sent it? I mean, it wasn't a message of warning, was it? It was just, this vessel's gone, and that vessel's gone.
It was just letting them know that I think somebody must have, again, a conscience must have been pricked. Just letting them know that there was a U-boat operating in the area. But normally when that happens, there's certain things put into protocol. One is either send an escort or tell the order the ship to turn back, or, you know, so other things, but nothing. Just, you know, we've told you it's there.
So do you think maybe that was, you know, that was, again, that was somebody in the intelligence who they didn't really know who it was that sent that? Or do you think that was sent out so that they could use it as an excuse later on and say, well, we did warn them. We didn't know it was going to happen.
Yeah, I think that was an official, you know, warning as such, but, you know, wasn't followed up by anything.
You know, after that, the U-boat appears. It fires one torpedo only. And yet the Lusitania sinks, and we don't really get to see much of it or learn much about what actually happened there. But if listeners listen to the Axis War Heroes episode we did, it gives you like an eyewitness report of it, doesn't it, from the German side, what they saw.
Two explosions, yeah. Only one torpedo was fired.
Yeah, but, that's
a second explosion followed after that.
And a massive explosion, and that was, I mean, because they were saying in that, oh, there must have been ammunition there, but they weren't aware that it actually had gun turrets on it as well. That's come about since then, I think. They've discovered that. The ship was full of ammunition, which blew up and cost 1,000 lives, but this information was suppressed. Out of 1,959 people on board, only 764 survive. And the Cunard Line, which owned the vessel, offers rewards for bodies recovered. And bodies, Ireland, Wales.
And I think it was £100 for the millionaires or the more important passengers.
Right, these bodies were appearing everywhere. 65 were found, but were never identified.
Yeah.
I mean, that must be pretty horrible.
Turned up on the shores of Wales.
Yeah, I think I've heard mention of it, actually, of this happening, that turning up on beaches. Wilson pretends to calm the nation. The death of over 100 Americans is an act of war. So was he really pretending to calm the nation, do you think? I mean, that's what the documentary series is trying to say, isn't it?
We know he was a tool of the banker. The bankers put him in as president, just like they put Roosevelt in. So he would have been privy to information, you know, and although the Americans finally went to, you know, war in 2 years' time, that was to do with the Balfour Agreement, and maybe all that was planned. Who knows? They were probably waiting for that.
Well, yeah, Churchill wanted them to go to war straight away, but he didn't go. He held back for another 2 years. But when they finally did go, it was this attack on the Lusitania that was really spurring them on. Well, it doesn't end there. There's an inquiry into the attack, and the investigation is led by a Lord Mersey, who is apparently unaware of the letters that were sent by Churchill's Admiralty. You remember, he sent them out to these, sent them out saying that they wanted to get these passenger ships into dangerous waters so that the Germans would attack them. And he was also sending out letters to the neutral ships saying they need to attack the U-boats. And this Lord Mersey didn't know about that. So I wonder who did know about this. I mean, who knew about this in the government? Was Churchill just acting on his own here? Was he acting under orders? Who was it?
Well, the memo. Well, I mean, he's the admiral, isn't he? So the book stops with him. I mean, the memo said not to be seen by any foreign, foreign ships or submarines. You know, it's a top secret. So obviously, this was a the highest, you know, highest level of secrecy, and Churchill would have been the one to sign it.
Yeah, do you think he was acting on his own, or do you think he'd had orders to do that from above him?
I think he had capabilities of acting on his own because of his, you know, his standing as admiral.
Well, some must have known about it. I mean, he's sending out other secret letters that we've got. And he says it is considered politically expedient that Captain Turner be prominently blamed for the disaster.
Yeah, so now he's not only a psychopath, but he's a rat and a traitor and a coward.
And he's shifting the blame to an innocent man.
Yeah.
Although this Captain Turner, I mean, I say he's an innocent man. He's not really, because he could have said, look, this is not a good idea. The Germans have said that they're going to have U-boats in those waters. They've said that it's a legitimate war zone. Why are you sending the ship there? I don't want to take the ship there.
That's a fair argument. But I'm pretty sure he must have asked at one point, like, is it safe? And they would have said no. Oh, sorry, they would have said yes.
They would have said yes, wouldn't they? That's the thing.
Yeah.
Because he's responsible for his passengers, but he would have been told it's safe, so you can go. So they can't.
He may have even suggested turning back, and they probably refused that. We don't know that to that extent. What we do know is all what's been going on behind the scenes with Churchill.
Well, Churchill then leads the charge against the captain and rouses up a load of bad public feeling against him, and he ensures that the highest skilled lawyers are used against him. But amazingly, Turner is found not guilty after 4 weeks of investigation.
It must have been blatant that he wasn't to blame then.
Yeah, well, and again, you know, it may be that the British justice system back then, you know, there was still a chance of getting justice there.
Mm.
And it was probably, you know, a lot less corrupted than it is today. And, you know, as I was saying, you've got somebody that warned the ship from within the intelligence. You've got this court here, or this inquiry, that refuses to do what Churchill is wanting them to do, which is to blame an innocent man.
Well, this isn't the first time it's been done. The Americans did this with the sinking. Remember the ship what went down with all the sharks? They blamed the captain for that. He actually committed suicide. The Indianapolis.
Remind us what happened there, Dennis, with the sharks.
Yeah, well, the Indianapolis was a ship which was taking over the atomic bomb in World War II, and it had dropped it off. On the way back, it was sunk by a Japanese submarine, torpedo again, and the crew were all either killed on impact or they were thrown into the sea and surrounded by sharks for the next 4 or 5 days, because nobody actually knew they were missing for whatever strange reason. But most, although some were eaten by sharks, but most actually died by drinking salt water. Because apparently if you drink salt water, obviously sailors obviously were thirsty and they were in the middle of the sea. If you drink salt water, that kind of drives you crazy and eventually kills you. That was the main reason for people dying, but certainly the terror of being in a huddle of American sailors and feeling a shark go past your leg certainly wouldn't have helped the nerve ends.
Well, why would they have wanted that ship to be taken down? Why did they blame the captain for it?
No, they didn't want it taken down. It was just happened to be taken down. There was a Japanese submarine in the area and saw the ship and took it down. And when they realised it were finally missing, they sent out search and rescue aeroplane, spotted it and rescued what sailors there were. But when they came back, obviously, there was somebody somewhere high up had goofed. And, of course, let's blame the captain again.
Well, they did still blame a captain. They blamed the German captain. Yeah, yeah, they blamed did, the, yeah. they blamed this the German captain, but not the American one. He was the guy that shot the Lusitania, but he was quite within his rights to fire a torpedo at it. They had given fair warning. They'd taken an advert out and put it in the newspaper saying, if you send a ship over and we see it, we're going to have no option but fire at it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a legitimate target, but obviously they decided Germany were to blame.
Well, the interesting thing is, you know, they didn't do that to these other vessels, and they let them out. So, you know, it makes me wonder if they didn't have some intelligence that said that the Lusitania is going to be filled with arms.
Well, they did, actually, yeah. I mean, I didn't manage to get that bit in what I sent you. Yeah, they actually knew for sure that it was armed.
Because that makes sense, because they allowed the other ones to, you know, they managed to do the other ones without any loss of life, but this one, how are you going to get to it without any loss of life when it's got 12 gun turrets on there, when it's been turned into a warship, into a battleship by Churchill? And then this Lord Mersey, who you think, well, actually he's okay, because he hasn't gone along with Churchill. He does actually help the cover up by claiming that two torpedoes struck the ship simultaneously, right in the middle of the ship, in order to cause maximum loss of life. When in actual fact, there was just one torpedo and it hit near the bows where all the ammo was.
Yeah.
And I guess if it was hit near the bows, it was, you know, it's going to take a little bit longer for the ship to sink than if you split the whole thing in half. Which is what you would get if you hit it broadside on in the middle.
Mm. Yeah,
it's still a lie to say two torpedoes hit it. And think, you know, throughout the rest of the war, America is thinking that Germany has deliberately killed all these innocent American people. When in actual fact, it was Churchill that set this up, and it was Churchill responsible for it. Well, Churchill actually steps down as First Lord of the Admiralty a month later.
Yeah, there must have been some reason for that. I don't think he would have gone willingly. He must have got some heat from somewhere.
You think he was pushed?
I think that kind of would have took the sting out of it, I think, yeah.
Because the war went on for another 3 years, didn't it?
Yeah, it did. And I'm not sure in what capacity he came back again. Because he certainly had a lot to do with the blockade. He even admitted, he said, like, the blockade was there to starve old men, women, babies, and pets. So, you know, I'll have to research to see at what stage did he come back with any certain command.
I mean, he's not a man that you would want running a country, is he? I can understand why you want someone who's like a bulldog, someone, you know, who's going to be an absolute savage and, you know, is going to kill everything that he can kill. If you're in a, you know, if you're in a war and if you've got them on the front lines, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I know exactly. Don't forget, you're drunk as well.
There are positions that he could have been given where, you know, would have been much better suited and, you know, would not have been so dishonourable for the British people. But to put a man like that as Prime Minister and put him in charge of everything, you know, it's, really, really dishonourable. Bad judgment. So, and he stepped down. So he was, so he wasn't sacked, but he must
no,
have
No, he wasn't
resigned.
Sacked. He wasn't imprisoned. He wasn't
been
fined.
Asked to.
He just got away with it and then waited till everything calmed down and came back again.
Well, it was probably this that was the cause of that.
Yeah. Probably, yeah, because somebody had to be held accountable. And if it weren't the captain, then, you know, probably he got some heat from somewhere.
Well,
maybe people were asking questions, you know.
It was a gamble as well that he was playing, wasn't it? He was gambling that if he could pull this off, America would come into the war and he'd be the great hero Churchill that got Woodrow Wilson into the war. And instead, he was the scoundrel Churchill who lost all his lives.
I'm actually saying Wilson may well have known about the Balfour Agreement because Lord Balfour was a member of Rothschild's circle of Freemasons called the Kindergarten. So Balfour and Rothschilds and one or two other highly known Freemasons would have been well aware of, they were going to ask for Palestine, if you like. And they certainly delivered. So they may have been waiting for that moment when the German banker Jews said to England, we can get America in the war if we can get Palestine, if you remember.
So Churchill was trying to jump the gun a bit. The Jews wanted to get the Balfour Declaration in. They wanted to get Palestine and then get America into the war. And Churchill was jumping the gun and saying, we're gonna sabotage the Lusitania and I'll try and get them in the war that way.
Well, when you think about it, Wilson got a lot of stick for being a pacifist. He's saying to the country, like, you know, no, we don't really want to get involved. But there's 170, 190 odd Americans killed. The country's crying out for war. I'm quite sure the bankers would have wanted America in the war when they wanted them in. So they probably held back. Yeah, it looks to me like they held back.
Well, was he a genuine pacifist, do you think?
No, I don't think he was. He was just taking orders from the banks, just like Roosevelt.
While they were sort of stirring up the anger. So I guess this would have helped, wouldn't it? This would have stirred up the rage in America and getting them primed and ready to join in the battle in Europe, which they weren't, they weren't happy about doing at first. You know, it took them quite a while to get them to be interested because they didn't want to be involved in Europe's wars. That was the whole point in America being separate to Britain.
War, yeah.
They didn't want to be involved in it. And there was an American newspaper called The Fatherland, which was written by Germans. It was written by German expats, and it gave the German side of the story right up until when America entered the war. But
right.
they didn't have a lot of funding. They didn't have a lot of promotion, and Britain was quite expert at promoting Britain's side of things. And also after Rhodes, after he died, and he left in his will, didn't he, that he wanted America and Britain to get back together again. And
there was
all this drive to do that, this secret plan. So Britain was quite tight with America.
And the media controlled the media.
And Britain was giving the whole narrative of what was happening in the war. And all Germany had was this Fatherland newspaper, like desperately trying to say, well, this is what's happening from our point of view. But I don't think it had much of a readership. And Caroline
Yeager's gone through them all. Germans as well over in America.
That's who it was for.
Farmers built that place, yeah.
Yeah, it was German expats. It was the Germans that were in America. I'd say Caroline Yeager's done, she's gone through every episode of it or every issue of it and pulled out the most relevant stories over at her website. And there's mention there of the build up to this Lusitania and how the Germans were desperately trying to say, how do we warn these Americans not to keep getting on these passenger ships? They're going through a war zone. Again, to repeat what I said earlier, you've got the same thing happening in Iran, same thing happening in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, we don't actually see any public announcement to say to people, don't travel in these waters from Britain or even America. Because America's busy sending the arms, Britain's happily receiving them, and blow all the civilians. You would think the Germans who won them.
Yeah, well, you would think the civilians would think, well, hang on a minute, isn't there a war going on over there at the moment? Is it really that sensible thing?
A lot of people, especially them days, believe their own government. So if they're thinking, well, their own government's not saying anything, it must be all right.
Well, the government was countering it, weren't they? They were coming out with other propaganda and saying, oh, no, it's just a joke. They know they're not really going to do it. They wouldn't really do that.
Yeah, well, now we know, don't we?
Yeah, Churchill never spoke about room 40. So I don't know when we discovered that. Again, I say must have been after his death. It wasn't mentioned during the war. And I don't know when they discovered, well, when America discovered that Britain was actually responsible for this. Do you know when that happened, Dennis?
No, when but I'm pretty out? Sure. I'm pretty sure the bankers who control both Britain and America would have been more than clued up on what were going on.
No, I'm sure. Wilson was not even informed that British intelligence had broken Wilson the German codes. No. He wasn't even told that they'd broken the German codes.
No, no, but I think the bankers were in.
Yeah, well,
it's
you
just
think
a puppet, you know.
You think yeah, I guess they would have known if they were controlling things on both sides. And he certainly didn't know that the U-boat was in the path of the Lusitania. And America waits another 2 years to enter the war.
Exactly, yeah. So I think that they held back for this Balfour Agreement. I put money on it.
Did America know about the Balfour Agreement, or was this a secret agreement?
No,
do you know?
No. This came out years later. As far as Americans knew, the time had come for war. They probably had the Lusitania in the back of their mind as well. And it's only because Britain were really hanging on at that time as well that they agreed to it, because they were really struggling.
Is there any wording actually in the agreement that says we'll bring the Americans into the war, or is it just Benjamin Friedman's word that we've got for that?
No, there is some actual factual
documentary evidence for it.
Yeah, it isn't in the conspiracy. It is an actual. It's a fact that they offered to bring the Americans in the war if they got Palestine.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if the Americans knew about that.
The American people didn't know about it, no.
Did the American government know about that, or did they find that out after the war? Did they know it at the time?
The American government and the bankers and the bankers in Germany, the Jewish bankers in Germany, the Warburgs, obviously said to Britain, we can get Americans in the war quite easily, because all the top American bankers were the buddies. They're all in it together.
Yeah, I'm just wondering about whether Woodrow Wilson knew about it, and was it Roosevelt and the others?
Well, they'd only be told what they need to know. You know, the bankers would have completely, run the show and told Roosevelt what to do, even told Stalin what to do, Lenin what to do, once they got the Soviet Union. It's just a government of bankers, if you like, and the people who were put in power, the presidents, there's a row of people running the country behind them.
And you got Bernard Baruch, he was the finance
guy.
He was the main guy. And Henry Ford.
Shift all them.
Henry Ford writing about it all at the time. I don't know if what he thought of the Lusitania, whether he knew there was any skullduggery.
He wasn't really... He would have known what were going on in America, I think, with the bankers. Pretty sure.
They're amazing, isn't it? They put advertisements up to warn them, and they just totally ignored it.
Yeah, totally ignored it. Again, loss of life means nothing.
All right, Dennis.
Yeah.
Come to the end of the episode. Thank you very much for coming on today.
I think it's about 1,200, that body count, I think. I'll get the correct figure.
Yeah, keep a count. Keep a count. Talking of account there, we do have a Bitcoin wallet, and we do require your donations to keep Radio Albion going. And you can find the address for that at the bottom of every article. Thank you very much, listeners, for listening. We'll be back next Friday with more Truthful Out Radio for you. And, of course, we do hope you have a great weekend ahead of you.
RadioAlbion.com